Now, no other animal has shared as much with humanity as the domestic dog. Indeed, for at least 32,000 years, this creature, but one poor step away from the wolf, has willingly and happily traded freedom for an uncertain relationship with humankind. Well, our first guest today has been on the show before talking to us about cats. She's now going to talk to us about the history of the dog. Welcome back to the show, Amy Shojai.
Oh, very nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me back.
So glad that you're with us again, Amy. So where did it all start with the dog? Where and when did it originate?
Oh, my goodness. In an evolutionary standpoint, dogs and dog predecessors have been around probably longer than humans. And we believe that the connection between people and canids evolved from wolves following the camps of the humans, and the doggy ancestors said, hey, you know, let's hang out with these humans because they are so wasteful. They don't eat everything of the animals that they are hunting. And so they hung around and they became kind of the camp followers, the garbage collectors, eating the leftover, the remains. And see, the people discovered, hey, there is a really good positive impact of having these creatures around, because they let us know when danger's coming. Maybe there's a, you know, a big animal that's going to come and try to eat the people, and they let us know about that. And they also can go identify which of the antelope is the best bet for hunting, and they'll cut them out of the herd and they'll work together. And so it became the kind of this symbiotic relationship where people at first tolerated and then welcomed these camp followers. And so, and you know, we now believe that, you know, archaeological evidence puts the ancestors of dog very, very early in human evolution. But from DNA, we know that it's even earlier than the 15,000 years we first thought. So it's still open to some speculation, and I go over that in the book, Dog Life. So it's really fun to speculate and see how much our modern dogs have in common with their ancestors. And of course, our modern dogs are not wolves, so they act very differently. They need to eat very differently, all of those things. But it's kind of fun to compare the two.
Yeah, I've said to a few people before, I always keep in mind that they're descendants of wolves, because as much as I love my dogs, all my dogs are very well behaved, they're adorable, they're lovely, but I would never, for example, leave my dog alone with a baby, because it's natural instinct, if the baby, say, grabbed it or something, would be to snap. And so you have to remember, they're not our babies. They are dogs at the end of the day.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that instinctive behavior is hardwired into their makeup. I mean, just as a human baby will cry if they're hurt, you know, an animal is going to be self-protective as well. And yes, dogs can become very protective of and tolerant of our infants, but it's up to us human parents, the tall two-leggers, to take care of everybody there. And of course, we want to protect our dogs also, because if they snap and scare or injure one of our children, it's the dog that's going to pay the price. So yeah, we want to protect the dog as well as the child.
Yeah, quite right. And I was reading from your book, it's incredible how dogs have been both revered and scorned throughout history. It seems to change. So, for example, Egyptian law, they actually worshipped the dog, did they?
Well, they worshipped a jackal-headed god, and Anubis was one of the deities of the ancient Egyptian society. Different parts of that part of the world revered different types of deities. Of course, you know, cats were also very revered, but it wasn't that unusual. You know, Egypt had the jackal-headed gods, and you will see statues of humans standing there, and it looks like a, you know, a normal human, except he's got a head of a jackal. So that's real interesting. And even in the Americas, there were dog creatures that were celebrated again for their hunting prowess. I mean, they probably were both scared of these creatures that if they got, you know, a defenseless human alone, they might eat them. But at the same time, they revered their prowess for hunting and almost supernatural ability to sniff out prey and hear things. And so it was kind of an interesting mix there. I think we still have a little of that today. Mm. You know, how amazing is it that our dogs will alert us. Yesterday afternoon, I live in North Texas, and we have about 13 acres here. And my little dog, barked and alerted me out the window. And I looked out, and there were four deer.
Wow. Outside
in the backyard. And he was so excited. He wanted to go out and meet these big, tall, funny looking dogs. So it's, you know, and I hadn't a clue, but he lets me know.
Yeah, of course. I can see a picture of your lovely little dog on the screen. What a sweetie.
Yes, that's Shadow. And the cat is Karma. Aww. And they are best friends. And of course, the cat is in charge. Cats typically rule. The dog doesn't know any better, but the cat is in charge.
Now, going back in history, one example of them not being so very much liked was in the Middle Ages, where dogs were declared dirty and feared as werewolves.
Right. Europe, the dogs kind of fell in disfavor. And I think that tends to be a human trait. When things are not going so well, we look for a scapegoat. And so that was a way to blame other creatures, other things outside of our control. So yes, there were dogs that would come down with, we didn't have any protection against rabies, of course. So that was a scourge of dogs, that their bite carried poison that would kill people. There were myths and strange stories told about, you know, the funny man, the hairy man that lives down the way, and he must, you know, there have been children missing or somebody died unexpectedly. Well, it must be a werewolf. So there are a lot of those kinds of stories that were told to try to explain the inexplicable.
Yeah, yeah. And then I was reading about some of the famous people you mentioned, too many to go through here, but one of them being President Roosevelt, who loved his Scottie dog called Fala, and then General Patton, who named his bull terrier Willie after William the Conqueror.
Yes, yes, yes. And that was interesting. You know, you have to think, even if you don't care much for the human themselves, if they like dogs, they can't be all bad. You know, that's kind of my test. So even if it's a bad guy, if he loves a dog, there has to be something good about him inside. And if the, you know, our dogs are so forgiving that they will love an axe murderer. Who knows? No. What's going on there? But, you know, dogs are very forgiving. Even if you, you know, step on a paw accidentally, or, you know, some people that don't take good care of them, the dogs still love us. And I think that's an enduring and an endearing quality we love about our dogs.
Yeah. And I always think with dogs, they're extremely loyal, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there are stories, and I mentioned some of them in the book, about dogs that mourn the loss of their human, Greyfriars Bobby, that stayed on his master's grave for years. There was an Akita in Japan that when he always met his human at the train station every day. And one day his human did not come back. He had passed away, but this dog continued to faithfully wait for his human. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we've been celebrating these kinds of stories as well, just, you know, forever. There were dogs. It was surprising to me that I think I've got a picture in the book There's so much in the book of one of the war dogs that was a Yorkshire Terrier and would fit in. He could sit in the helmet of, he carried messages back and forth. I think that was during the First World War. So there are a lot of these kinds of stories. The Anton Chekhov, a playwright, very well-known Russian short story writer and playwright, there's a sculpture of him with his dog. So, I mean, we celebrate the relationships that we share with these very innocent creatures. I mean, we pretty much know what our dog wants at any given time. You know, attention, a tummy rub, a cool treat. Oh, I can't say that too loud, or my dog will. So they're in many ways they are like a 4-year-old child in terms of their emotional growth, and yet at the other end of the spectrum, we partner with them as service animals. And they become our ears or our eyes or our stability when we can't stand well enough, or if we're wheelchair bound, and they will be our hands and bring us things. So all of these wonderful things that dogs bring to our lives.
Yeah, hear, hear. Well, there's lots in the book. You'll find information about dog behavior, tips for proper training, advice on when to vaccinate, and information about choosing and caring for puppies. There's also a gallery of breeds. Dog life is sure to capture the fancy of dog lovers everywhere. So for our listeners, we're selling it on our website right now. It's called Dog Life, Celebrating the History, Culture and Love of the Dog by Amy Shojai, who we're speaking to now. Do you want to just give us your website, Amy?
Oh, sure. Yes, you can find me at shojai.com, and that's my last name. So it's S as in Sam, HOJAI.com. And you can find Dog Life there, a number of other prescriptive nonfiction books there. And I'm working on book number 7 in a thriller series. Ooh. that feature pet-centric plots. And then there is a German Shepherd service dog in the series. So that's something if people are interested in that. But that's at shojai.com.
Well, do let us know when that one's out and we'll chat again.
Great. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's been lovely chatting to you. Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.